Welcome to episode 67 of the Mountain Land Running Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Heiderscheidt from the University of Wisconsin Sports Medicine. And here with my co-host, back after with popular demand, due to popular demand, Jeremy Stoker.
Yeah, again, Brian, I still feel like you jaded me when you were like saying I skipped out on you, and you know, but I'm glad to be here. Thanks for letting me be in your presence again.
Was it that obvious that I'm trying to like push you off the show? Is that clear that that's happening?
Okay. I hear that. I get it. I can take a hint. I'm a little slow sometimes. So the third hint is where I really got it. So
no. I'd love to have you back. I'm really glad it worked out scheduling wise today to get you here. All right. So again, just a reminder to our listeners, don't forget Mountain Land Running Summit. Plans for 2022 are in the works. They'll be posted very soon. We've got our speaker itinerary all lined up, an agenda lined up, but we're not releasing it quite yet. So check it out in a few weeks. We'll have it on the website. But of course, this is September 29th or October 1st at the Sheraton Park City in Park City, Utah. Reminder again, send questions and feedback to podcast@mlrehab.com. Always like your feedback as well as suggestions for future guests. And speaking of guests, today we're going to talk with Shefali Christopher from Elon University about pain in postpartum runners. Dr. Christopher is an assistant professor at Elon University in the Department of Physical Therapy. She started treating runners 12 years ago because no one else wanted to deal with the triathletes and the runners. I think we all can relate to that. And slowly built a caseload of predominantly endurance athletes. She has spoken at several local, regional, and national conferences about treating the triathlete and runner, and was the keynote speaker at the University of Virginia's Running Medicine Conference in 2019, and was one of our keynotes at this and last year's Mountain Land Running Summit in 2021. She currently practices in the Elon Runs Clinic and the Athletic Training Room, teaches Elon DPT students, and is the director of the Elon Sports PT Residency Program. She received her PhD from the University of Newcastle in Australia in 2021, where her thesis focused on running-related pain in postpartum runners. And I think you got notification of passing everything during the running summit. Wasn't that the case?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I got the email, I think, the morning I was going to speak. So it was very exciting.
Very exciting for sure. And in case you didn't recognize the voice, that is Shefali. So welcome, Shefali, and thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be back.
Yeah, right. And again, our listeners probably remember Shefali from our postpartum panel back in 2020, was it? I think it was the beginning of 2020, where we had a number of individuals, Rita Deering among them, and Shefali certainly, and had a great discussion on postpartum pain and returning runners, treating runners during pregnancy as well as postpartum.
I think, Brian, it was the exact, like, I think it was a year around, like, I think we're off by maybe a week, but exactly a year ago.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was last year.
Well, we just got to make this an annual event, I
think. Yeah.
Perfect. I'm in.
There we go. Well, and we wanted to reach out to you again because, of course, Shefali finished her PhD, which means Shefali has publications. And so that's what we're going to follow up with, is some of her recent work that she's published. So Shefali, again, maybe just dust it off for our listeners. A little overview on your background. What got you interested in pregnancy, runners, postpartum? Obviously, you work with a lot of triathletes and distance runners, so I'm guessing that came kind of organically out of your practice, maybe only out of your own personal experience. But why don't you give us a little bit of an overview?
Happy to. I'll tell you the long story because I think it makes sense when I give you the long version. So I was actually a swimmer in college and went straight from undergrad to graduate school at Duke for physical therapy. And when I got to, PT school, I was trying to figure out what to do for exercise because I didn't have a swim coach yelling at me and telling me what to do. And a couple of people in my class were doing triathlon. So I got into it and was just a great way to have some goals and exercise and all of that. But I had to teach myself to ride a bike. I grew up in Bombay, India, where, you know, it's a big bustling city. So you don't really ride bikes around unless you, if you don't value your life, you can ride your bikes around. But so I had to teach myself to ride a bike, but also to run because I was mostly, you know, in the pool doing pool workouts. That organically, when I graduated and started working at Duke Sports Medicine, because I had a background and interest in triathlons, running, and biking, I started seeing that population. And I actually did a Ironman in 2010 as kind of like one of the big goals I had. But that's an important story to tell you, because in 2011, I was pregnant with our first child. And right about that time, I was still pretty active. You know, my athletic identity was this triathlete, and I was trying to figure out, you know, can I run? Can I bike? What's safe? What's not safe? And back 10 years ago, the pregnancy literature was still like there was not much out there as to what was safe and not safe. And I heard a lot of crazy things that people told me what I shouldn't do and should do. And being the first child, I actually was pretty frightened to even move. And as a result, had a lot of lumbopelvic pain and all of that during the pregnancy, because I just wasn't doing anything. I was sitting around mostly, you know. And then, you know, coming back from that, I didn't have time to go to the pool or to bike. So I ended up predominantly trying to run. And like teaching myself how to get back to running. But again, it wasn't really a priority, because I was learning to be a new mom and balance work and life and all of that. And then when I had the second child, I actually, there was more research out there on pregnancy. I felt more comfortable, you know, pushing the boundary a little bit. I tried to do a half marathon at 24 weeks pregnant. That didn't go as well as planned, but you know, I ran through it, and you know what, you know, was fine till about a time where my body said, okay, running may not be the best mode. And then after that, you know, there still wasn't much research. Along the same time, my career path changed a little bit, and I got into academia and decided to pursue a PhD. So the timing of everything, you know, I was asking questions about like, how should someone get back to running? What if they had pain? What if they don't have pain? And so that's how my interest and background in this area started. Personal experience, working with other runners that were coming in the clinic who were postpartum. You know, I saw women who were elite athletes that, you know, came back from childbirth and couldn't get back to it without pain. So all of these things kind of led me to this area. And when there was nothing there, I decided like, we need to start putting some literature out there to understand, to guide other clinicians that are treating this population so they can get the best care.
Do you remember at that time when you were back in 2011 and trying to scour the literature to find something to help guide what you wanted to do? Do you remember reading anything and being like, wait, this makes absolutely no sense, or finding out that there's nothing to read on certain topics? Was there anything that really stuck in your mind that was just like, wow, something needs
to be done? Yeah, I think that was more of it, right? There was nothing out there that was guiding us one way or the other. So clinicians were, you know, I think as PTs sometimes were more conservative. And so the recommendations were, oh, you should probably just take it easy. And, you know, and I was having all this pain because my level of activity had dropped significantly. So I actually was so much weaker than I normally was. I remember covering a football game, having to wear an SI belt because the uneven surface of the field, I couldn't even stand for long periods because I had so much lumbopelvic pain during that time. And, you know, the only recommendation was don't do anything, look after yourself, you know, don't overdo it. So that was the most frustrating. And then of course, you know, postpartum as well, you know, don't run and then feed your baby, because the lactic acid in the milk will stop, you know, feeding and all of that. And that was some of the stuff I scoffed at, because I was like, well, we're going to try it, because for mom's mental sanity, she has to go out and get a break. And so, you know, that was more of like just the pure fear of movement afterwards.
Yeah.
And there were two extremes, Brian, because the MDs, you know, they see you at 6 weeks and say, all right, you're good. And I'm like, I'm not good. I know that as a physical therapist, you know, right from like how to do a pelvic floor contraction to everything. Like I knew what I should be doing and I knew what my body was responding with. And it was completely shocking to see just that disjointedness between what's out there and what I was experiencing.
Yeah, I imagine so. And then not to mention, of course, you are going to get other myths from other groups as well that you probably find is, you know, using your heart rate and body temperatures and other little tidbits or you shouldn't run beyond a certain distance. And while some of it makes a bit of sense, you're right, there's such a conservative side to it that it's not necessarily founded in as much evidence as you'd want it to be.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then, of course, that defines your career. Like, okay, now I know what I want to research.
Absolutely. And have this, if this like underlying fire, because I'm like, no, I don't want anyone else to go through what I went through. So what can I do to make a difference?
And I think a lot of times when you're starting in a field where there's nothing, right? A lot of times people think, well, that's easy because nothing's been done in there. So you can do anything you want. It's almost harder, right? Because it's like, there is nothing. So to begin a research program and to really begin to address the question, you're not going to be able to tackle the question that you really want to answer, right? You have to start building pieces along the way so then you can do that big study that you're looking to get at.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I owe a lot of that to my two PhD mentors, Chad Cook and Suzanne Snodgrass, because I'd bring these ideas to the table and they'd scale them back and say, well, first we got to do this before you can do this. And, you know, so they really helped me change my thinking from clinician to, you know, researcher and help me understand the steps that would be needed.
But at the same time, that the hat you wear as a clinician was invaluable to the research process and arguably helped create the research that you did, given that level of experience.
Yeah, I would think so. So thank you. And I think, like, you know, some of the discussions that I've written, I always like try to put the clinical applicability in so that the clinician who's reading it, you know, if I said something, can find some use in the discussion as well.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so let's talk about your most recent publication. So again, for our listeners, we'll have this on the podcast download site. We'll have a link right to the PubMed abstract. The title of the paper is "What Are the Biopsychosocial Risk Factors Associated with Pain in Postpartum Runners? Development of a Clinical Decision Tool." And this was published in the August issue in 2021 of PLOS ONE. And again, PLOS ONE is an open access publication, so any listener can jump right on PubMed and download it and give it a full read. All right, Shefali, floor is yours. Talk us through what your intention and objective was.
Yeah, so I think I'd like to go into a little bit of like how we got to this paper as well.
Right.
So when we were starting to really understand postpartum runners, actually, Brian, I think it's one of your papers with Liga Blyholder that looked at habits of postpartum runners. Yep. And one of the things that caught my eye was a lot of them, like I think 30 something percent were reporting pain with in that postpartum state. So that kind of was what sparked this one of these journeys. And my question as a clinician was, why? Why are they having pain? What is unique to them? And so one of our first papers was what are the factors that are causing first-time lumbopelvic pain postpartum. So we know a lot about pregnancy-related lumbopelvic pain, but what about first-time postpartum? So we did a systematic review looking at that. We also did a systematic review looking at what tests and measures are predictive of running-related pain. And with both those, unfortunately, low quality studies, different definitions. So it's a little bit harder to come up with anything conclusive from those systematic reviews. But that some of those questions then helped us with a Delphi study, where we asked expert clinicians that work in this population, what are the impairments? What are the impairments they're seeing with postpartum runners that are having pain? So what strength, what flexibility, what range of motion? We asked a lot of pain-related questions that haven't been published as well. And then some of those answers really helped format this survey for the runners themselves. So this this PLOS ONE paper, we did an online survey, and we didn't limit it to the United States. We opened it to any postpartum runners, and they had to have a child under 36 months old, and we included runners with and without pain. And we did some more, finagling on the Qualtrics. So if they weren't running once a week because of other reasons, like because COVID spanned the timeline or childcare, they couldn't finish the survey. But if the reason they weren't running was pain, then they were included in the survey. So we ended up with, yes, go ahead.
Sorry, I'm just going to jump really quick.
Yeah.
You mentioned Qualtrics, and again, just for our listeners, that's the survey tool that you use to send this out, right?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
All right.
Yep. Sorry. Yes, the Qualtrics tool. We ended up putting flyers in some local clinics, but also sending it to a lot of clinicians all over the United States and internationally. We used a lot of social media. I mean, I thank my involvement with the Academy of Sports Physical Therapy running SIG, because a lot of those members kind of got their patients and colleagues to participate in the survey.
That's great.
So we ended up with 538 participants, and out of that, 172 runners had pain. And so those were the two groups. And we were looking at a lot of different factors to see which were related to pain and which weren't. So the three big categories, one with demographics, because we really wanted to look at some social determinants of health and see how those stood out. We looked at running variables, so examples like weekly mileage, the time they started their first part of postpartum run, and then some postpartum variables like what kind of delivery they had, if they had any postpartum depression, fatigue, sleep, you know, things that would be important to our postpartum moms and them going back to running, but also variables that are associated with pain. You know, if you don't sleep enough, if that's been associated with pain. If you're fatigued, that's been associated with pain. So we're trying to collect some of these different variables and domains of variables. So that was kind of what we did. And then we did a lot of different statistics. Chad whipped me into doing a bunch of different things. So first, we looked at just the differences between groups, and we found in the demographic category, actually education level stood out as the women runners that had pain had a less than high school level of education, predominantly. Out of some of the differences with postpartum variables, incontinence, vaginal delivery, fatigue, if they said yes or no to that. Depression, mean sleep hours, number of interruptions. Those were some of the ones that were significant. And then in the running variables, mileage, if they ran less mileage actually, or if they had a previous injury, those stood out between the two groups. And then we did some fancier statistics and the six variables that kind of stuck around after a multivariate stepwise regression analysis. So these are the six that, you know, I really wanted to talk about today, where if they were novice runners, if they had a vaginal delivery, did they have any incontinence? So the incontinence question we asked just to screen was, you know, any urine, feces or gas leakage, even a few drops. And then which ones did I say? And then if they slept less than 6.8 hours, if they had fatigue or a previous running injury. So there were six of those that came out at the end of the model as the most important factors that differentiated the two groups. So they're not predictive because it's you know, case control, but yeah. Definitely came out in the differences between the two groups.
Yeah, the differentiators. I was curious to see that it didn't seem like there were any characteristics specific to pregnancy itself. There's a characteristic of the delivery, and then it seemed like most of the other characteristics were all representing of where they were during the postpartum period, but nothing about during pregnancy itself. And is that?
Yeah. We did ask about pregnancy-related pain, but I think it just didn't stand out as a significant differentiator. Yeah,
interesting. And you know, one thing that again, we'll talk about these topics in just a second. But I think one of the things that you know we struggled with our prior survey that you mentioned, and I'm sure you have ran into the same from reviewers, is you know this issue of recall bias when you're asking people, you know, up to 36 months. Post, were you asking them to recall their current state or to recall how they felt earlier in their pregnancy?
Most of the questions were current, right? So the average mileage in the last 4 weeks and the average mileage, you know, so we asked for them to answer it mostly, in the moment. But of course, you know, things like what kind of delivery they could answer with recall easily.
Yeah, exactly. So you're not concerned about bias trying to remember, did I have a C-section or a vaginal filler? Those are going to be pretty clear. You're going to remember
absolutely,
those.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we started, you know, I think if you wanted to even just go into more of the pregnancy and postpartum, like you can go down and just do all of that. This was kind of the 10,000 foot view. Like what are some big things that we want to look at first? And then we can go in and do more work. Once we have some idea of which direction to go in.
Yeah. Well, no, I think this is also the better design, right? Because you're talking about where they are currently. And so then you avoid that huge issue of recall, unless you go back and study that population at that time, which then prevents you from understanding what they're going to be like in the postpartum period, because now you're way back early on. So yeah, it's strengths and weaknesses, but there's an advantage to this. So the novice runner is interesting, right? Because one, it's interesting and it's not, in the sense that novice runners comes up all the time, right? As a risk.
Absolutely.
You see this in the general population, even outside of postpartum.
Yeah. You know, some of the thoughts we had is they just needed to get out the house and may have not known, you know, how much, how long, may have not been concerned about other factors that may have, you know, been part of it. You know, what if they already had, you know, some kinematic issues or something like that? But you know, our thoughts and some of the other literature that has found novice runners is they may need more of a structured program and just some recommendations as to how to increase mileage and loading and prepare for loading versus just go out and see what feels good. I've had that happen with some of the elite runners that I've treated in the clinic too. You know, 3 weeks post-childbirth, they're training for a half marathon and they forget that they were on bed rest halfway through their pregnancy. So, you know, they're back to the loading level as if nothing ever happened, but actually lots has happened. So, that's not novice, but I'm just giving, like, that's another example of what's happening out there without more guidance.
So talk a little bit about sleep and the amount of sleep that they report. What do you think on that?
You know, that's a hard one because babies wake up, they need to be fed often. So I think the biggest recommendation when I think of that as a clinician would be, you know, what is your training program like? And, you know, on a night that you get good sleep, maybe that's the day to push. Maybe that's your tempo day where you're trying to hit a certain, you know, speed. But if it's a poor sleep night, then maybe it's an easy run day or you drop your mileage a little bit. But you know, using those factors to then manipulate your training variables a little bit versus sticking to a rigid plan when you've maybe exhausted, not had enough sleep, and using some of that information to better inform what you're doing the next day. Yeah. I think moms feel guilty too, you know, lots of things, guilty about leaving the house, guilty about taking time for themselves, guilty about not following their training plan. So I think thinking of these variables and using them as data and as help and guidance, I think can be pretty powerful.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, the sleep one, I just see as being a challenging one, because I think your suggestion is great that, you know, what you decide to do that day should be partly based upon the quality of sleep you had the previous night. But then, of course, literature with sleep would suggest that's more than just, you know, the next day. It has ramifications multiple days later. And that's a hard nut to crack. But it's other than telling the mom, get more sleep, which is out of their control, because, of course, they're the first ones to say, I want more sleep.
Absolutely. You know, yeah.
That's a tough one.
Yeah. You know, and I keep thinking of our elite athletes who are maybe training for, you know, Olympic year or something like that. You know, maybe they find resources. You know, maybe that's, you know, someone's helping so they can take more naps, or someone's waking up with the baby and giving a bottle, or just some things that we could finagle. But before this, we didn't even think about sleep in the postpartum athlete. So, you know, just starting to think about more solutions and how do we help them?
Absolutely. So one of the other variables was the postpartum accumulated fatigue scale, the PAFS. Yep. And the higher the PAFS score, the higher odds for pain in the postpartum runners. Can you describe what that scale is?
Yeah, it asks a bunch of fatigue-related questions. It then totals the score up to tell you just how much fatigue you have.
Oh, I
and,
see.
I think it's 20 questions on fatigue. And then it was one of the scales that I found that was validated and used in this population, an athletic population. It was new to me when I was putting this together and like putting the survey together when we did some literature review. So it was good to find that and use it and put it out there as well. But it's a more objective way than just asking, are you tired? Yes or no, you know? so we did ask, are you fatigued? And if they said yes, give them the scale to just find out how fatigued they were. But another great way of capturing that information with your patients, objectively and have an outcome to work towards.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, actually, and my mind would tell me one thing, but are those who had higher scores on the fatigue scale also those who had less sleep? Were they similar, or were there some people that were fatigued that also didn't have the same amount of sleep?
So we didn't directly look at that, but I'm sure if I go back and look at those numbers, there has to be a relationship, right? If you're not sleeping and you're probably fatigued as well.
I would guess. I just wonder if that's some sort of predictor on their sleep amount, or even if the perception of fatigue plays into some sort of injury or some sort of that way, just the cognizant state of fatigue or something. I don't know. I'm just curious.
Absolutely. I mean, we see it with our runners all the time. They go out and are not in a good mental frame of mind and they have poor runs. And yeah, absolutely. I think that mental health piece. Yeah, that's why I actually wanted to look at that. We put in the depression question as well, just to see the mental health aspect of these moms and how they were doing.
Mm.
But I'll do some stats for you, Jeremy, later.
Thanks, Shefali.
Anything related to that? Yeah, I was worried that you've been really quiet. I was like, oh, I'm either boring or Jeremy's fast asleep after the lunch hour.
No, usually Brian's quicker to the trigger on the question, so I just have to listen, so it's good.
Oh, I see this is going. We're just gonna pass it along. Yeah. Well, I was just
gonna kick you off, and he's not letting you ask questions.
Yeah, this was my last podcast anyway. Brian already gave me the hint earlier today, so
you got your walking papers.
Yeah.
So if you look at the amount of sleep, and I'm just gonna mention that with Jeremy's question, the fact that, I mean, there probably is some level of association between the two, but the fact that they both remained in your multivariate model suggests that they are each providing uniquely different things as well. So that's there's potential for some overlap, but not total overlap. Yeah. So what about incontinence? That's always a tricky one. How do you suggest clinicians approach this with their patients?
I think that in general, if you have any athlete in front of you, you should definitely ask the incontinence question. Are you having any incontinence? Because it's still a pretty taboo topic, and lots of people may not give you that information unless it's asked, especially at a physical therapy visit. So I think baseline, when our residents or our students are doing evaluations, I always say, you need to ask the incontinence question. And then with our postpartum group, I think it's even more important because of, the weight of the baby during pregnancy. So even after C-section delivery, that the pelvic floor is such an important part of that core and keeping, the intra-abdominal pressure. So asking the question is going to be really important. Now, as a sports clinician, I have taken some pelvic floor classes, but my go-to is to refer to an amazing pelvic health therapist who works with runners and can do that part. And then we work in conjunction. So they may see her once a month and me, once a week. And then, we incorporate some of the work she's doing into our sessions and vice versa. A lot of good breathing, a lot of good reactivation, a lot of good relaxation sometimes. So, it's a piece that definitely contributes we're learning more and more about what kind of contributions, but it's a piece that we shouldn't miss in this group.
Yeah, no, well said. That's important. You're right. Having a good network of partners to work with on issues is really important, especially for this population when it is not just it's not just an orthopedic issue, right? It's not just a movement issue. There are impairment issues. There are mental health things. There are lactation type issues. I mean, there's a variety of things that may be outside of the average clinician's comfort zone.
Absolutely. And, you know, I would suggest reading the viewpoint that Rita and all of us put together for the JSBT, because it highlights the different phases and the different partners that you can work with for the different issues. And so having a network of people to refer to is going to be key to get this population back to 100%.
All right. Okay. So what's in your wheelhouse right now? What's the future research? I know you've got another Delphi or a Delphi study in the works, launched just a few days ago, but what else is going on? Yeah. What's
happening? So the Delphi is actually going to ask more about this, like what are people doing for return to running guidelines and get some consensus on what's out there and what we should be doing. But in our lab at Elon, we are actually starting to follow pregnant runners longitudinally, and we're hoping to continue to follow them postpartum, not only get biomechanical, but musculoskeletal data and some physiological data through their wearable. So we're trying to capture that, and I'm really, really excited about that. I think it's a big, big project because, you know, people's status change. They may not be runners, you know, after, before, during. So it's kind of one of those studies that's just going to start and go on probably till I retire. But other than that, you know, some of this survey had a lot of pain data. So understanding more about the pain, what are the descriptors, where are they feeling it? You know, this was the 10,000 foot view paper, but we've got some more data to get out of this and talk a little bit more and analyze a little bit more. So we've got some of that going on.
That's exciting. That's exciting. And of course the benefit will be in, you know, when that next physical therapist who does an Ironman and then gets pregnant afterwards and then goes to literature to find something, they're going to find all of the great research that you've done and they'll have some guidance.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah, absolutely. Shefali, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. Really appreciate it. And kudos to all your successes and your work. Looking forward to seeing a lot more of it to come.
Yep.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's podcast. On behalf of my co-host, Jeremy Stoker, this will be his last episode, but although we'd like to thank you for tuning in, he's not going anywhere. And as a reminder, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. Reminder to check for updates on the 2022 Mountland Running Summit, September 29th, October 1st at summit.mlrehab.com. As always, you can find more information on all the running medicine resources offered by Mountland Physical Therapy at mlrehab.com/run. We'll see you next time.
This podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Exercises that are safe and appropriate for some people may not be for you. No treatment program should be undertaken without first consulting your physical therapist or physician. The contents of this podcast is protected under United States copyright laws and may not be reproduced, redistributed, transmitted, displayed, published, or broadcast without prior written permission of Mountainland Physical Therapy.